Good morning. You are listening to The Beacon. Welcome back, Bri.
Well, thank you.
How are you?
I feel great.
You do?
Yes, I do.
I'm so glad. Any particular reason why?
Well, no.
Oh. You know what? It's just a sunny attitude you have. You just look at it through sunshine lens.
Well, I always like being on the radio, but hey.
That's true. Here we are.
Did you recently have a birthday?
Yesterday.
Oh.
Wow. Good for you. You know this.
Well.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I did. The big 4-2.
Oh.
The big 4-2. I can't believe it. The 40s have been a weird decade for me. Like I feel officially like it's kind of like this middle age, you know, that's sort of when it all starts happening. And I don't feel like I am, but here we are.
No, you feel as old as, I think we all stop maturing when we're 16, and then from that point on.
Chronologically, we age emotionally, not so much, developmentally,
exactly.
Not so much. It does feel like that. Like, sometimes I just feel like, gosh, I'm a grown-up. I don't feel like I have my grown-up.
You don't get it.
I don't get it. Yes. Yeah. But thank you for remembering.
Yeah, well, that happy birthday.
Thank you so much. Yes, as I said, my mom was in town last week. We went and saw Hamilton, and it was fabulous.
That's right. You're talking to me. Oh.
So I am. Well, the three-day shun is over.
Oh.
So we're okay now.
Three shows. That
would
be tough.
Three-day shun. That would be tough. I'll just sit here and talk to myself and pretend you're not
so
here.
So how did you like Hamilton?
It was phenomenal. Now, I have had the soundtrack memorized for months and months. So I almost thought that I was going to go into it a little bored. Like, I know the music. I get the it was so far beyond my expectations. I cannot even begin to put into words. And if there are other Hamilton fans out there, you all get it. I mean, Hamilton, it's almost like a cult now. Like, everybody is so in love with the show who knows the show.
I would say so. It is a cult, yes.
Yeah, it is. But I've never heard anyone who has seen it who has been like, meh, this is all right. Everybody who has seen it has just been absolutely blown away
by
it.
So it's about, what, the 1700s?
Right.
And so, it's set to hip-hop.
Exactly. And Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote it, is absolutely genius. There's so many wonderful nuances in it that you don't get on the soundtrack. And then afterward, we stayed after and we hit up the stage door. And so we got to meet the actors that played Hamilton, that played Aaron Burr, that played Eliza Hamilton, Alexander's wife. It was such a great, memorable night. So, you know, unfortunately, tickets are stupid expensive, and I hate that they do that because I think it should be more accessible to everybody. But if you do have an opportunity to go see it, go see it. It will rock your world.
I don't like that melding of hip-hop and 1700 history. And,
you know,
because it means the end of hip-hop, people who like that, because it's mainstream now. It's
the hip-hop is mainstream?
Yeah. I mean, it was grassroots, edgy, and now it's in a play about...
Yeah, I get that. I think that you have to, because I'm a huge hip-hop fan, too. You know, I mean, from, like, the 80s. I absolutely love hip-hop and always have. But it feels authentic. You know, and Lin-Manuel Miranda is very, he's just super down to earth and humble. Like, he's not some egomaniac who just like knocked this out on his, you know, his Autotron. I mean, the guy picked up an Alexander Hamilton biography to read on a beach vacation. Like, that's how this whole thing started. He was just in an airport, was like, I need something to read while I'm on vacation, so I'm going to pick up this, you know, 5,000-page biography of Alexander Hamilton. So he's a smart dude, you know, and he didn't have any intention of writing a musical. He just started reading it, and as he puts it, like, lyrics just started popping off the page. So, you know, he's very smart. He's very humble. He's very, very goofy. He's big on social media, so I follow him on social media. And, you know, he posts videos of himself, like, stupidly dancing on empty subway trains in New York. Like, he's just really a down-to-earth guy. So I think that it's a great show. I get what you're saying. I can get your apprehension. But if you were to experience it, you might feel differently.
I doubt it. All right. But, you know, I think part of it, if you know Alexander Hamilton's history, I guess he was a bit of a gangster because he used to get involved in duels and stuff like that. And,
okay. Exactly. Right. So it lends itself. It lends itself. And the whole Revolutionary War and just the way the characters are developed are, you know, it's just, it's very cool. It's very slick. So anyway.
So did anybody take a knee during the performance?
No, nobody took a knee, although I did want to talk to you about that with what your thoughts are about that.
Like, well, you know, I think they should just play football. It's just morphed from being something, a protest about police action. Colin Kaepernick thought that he should make a statement about, into what it is now. Let's just move on.
See, and I have a different perspective on it.
What's that?
Well, it started with Colin Kaepernick taking a knee to protest police brutality, and I supported that. You know, I absolutely supported his right to do that. What I saw this week, though, I found profoundly touching because, you know, people put football above God in this country. You know, a lot of people in this country look at NFL as a religion in and of itself. And so I think a lot of the issues that we've been facing with this most recent regime in our government organization, you know, I think that there's just been blind eyes that have been turned. So when the NFL started taking a stance on this, I was like, wow, you know what? People who normally wouldn't look at this might actually start paying attention to it. What I found so heartening was, you know, these NFL players came out, some of them were kneeling, some of them were standing, but they were all united. Like, even the players that were standing had their hands on the shoulders of the players that were kneeling, or their arms were linked. And there was just such a sense of unity, regardless of what you believe or what I believe or what they believe. It was like, you know what? We can all believe different things and we can still respect each other and we can still bring attention to the matters that are at hand. And I thought it was a beautiful way to kind of bring some, you know, highlight some of the injustices in our country that are very, very real right now. So that was where I stood on it. Your face is saying that you very much disagree
with me. It
wasn't
my take. I think they were reacting to what Trump said, President Trump said, calling them what he called them and saying they should be fired if they don't pledge allegiance to the flag. It should have been a statement by each team. We disagree with what the president said. And they should have walked out and still pledged allegiance to the flag and then and played the game. Because it's two different issues. Because people feel so strongly about the flag and what it means and saluting the flag. But their issue was Trump trying to tell them what to do. So
it did evolve. It evolved from what Kaepernick had originally, you know, what it originated as last season. It evolved into something very different. And you're right about that. I just think that bringing some sort of, I don't know, awareness to, I mean, I think our country is in such a state of chaos right now. And I hate it. I absolutely hate it. And so I think, you know, when there's a platform as giant as the NFL to bring awareness to people who may not want to pay attention to it or who may not be paying attention to it, I think, you know, was it a bad thing? No, I think it was good. And you know what? It'll be last week's news today. All right. You know, already it's probably going to be a one and done thing, but
I don't know. So
with that said, speaking of moving forward.
Yes.
Let's do so with the show.
With the show. All right. Who's going to be on the show today?
All right, today we have got our friend Sheila Perkins. This is her last show with
us.
Oh, Sheila.
Unfortunately. Well, unless she wants to come back on.
She's always
a force and I'm not going to stop her.
Come on. No, sweetie. She's going to be answering some questions, talking about employment tips on employment and job interviews and all the very valuable information that she brings to the table whenever she's on the show with us.
All right.
Yep. And then after Sheila, we have got...
We've got Brett.
Brett will
but
be
we
here.
Have Brittany Mayberry. She's from the Illinois chapter of Alzheimer's Association. And Sandra sat down and talked to her about the 10 signs of dementia, which you should look for, and other information as well. So we have those. We also have you with your Let Us Turn Up the Beat.
Yes, and I'm going to be discussing my annual public service announcement regarding pumpkin spice lattes because it is pumpkin spice latte season. In other words, I'm going to be doing my PSA on PSL. So, but I'm bump. So just wait for it.
Not bad, not bad. And then, of course, like I said, we're going to have Sandy and Brett and then Luke. You know, we never talked about Luke.
We've not. I heard Luke last week, and I was like, Luke, he's got an accent. Who is this Luke guy?
He's from merry old England.
Lovely.
And, of course, you know, Tom Persky, maybe you don't know, he moved... He left the lighthouse, another person who's left the lighthouse, and moved back to Arizona.
He just moved, though. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all that heat. He retired. So Luke is now taking his place talking about assistive technology and the road shoes. Road shoes? No, road shows.
I want a pair of those.
And all of that. So we sit down and we talk to him. So I think that is pretty much the whole enchilada.
That's the whole shebang, baby.
We're a service of the Chicago Lighthouse. This is the Lighthouse Beacon.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000 plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Yeah, I have an undergrad from DePaul, Computer Information Systems, and a master's in Business Information Technology. And I know I have a disability, and it can be challenging trying to get a position. You know, they want to hire someone with a disability. So that was one of the challenges I had also. Going to a job interview and people look at you strange because you have a disability. I've gotten frowned at. They'll say, we'll call you or we'll consider, but it never happened. The Lighthouse has provided me with employment. I've been here since 2013, November. I've grown. I transitioned from Illinois Tollway to UI Health. The Lighthouse is awesome. They really work with people with disability, visually impaired, and veterans, get employment, you know, find employment, because the percentage of people with disability is unemployed is extremely high. People that have degrees and they still can't find a job. So the Lighthouse is very supportive in helping them find employment. One word? I say, oh, awesome.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Chicago Lighthouse Beacon. I am Brett Shishkoff, and I have across from me Sheila Perkins, our Senior Vice President of Employment Services. How are you doing today?
Hi, Brett. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I'm doing well, too.
I actually want to start off right off the bat just stating that you're going to be retiring, I hear.
Yes.
Are you excited?
I am. That's good. This is the next step, you know, new adventure.
Mm-hmm.
We're moving out of town.
Mm-hmm.
So meaning my husband and I are moving out of town. So it is exciting.
We will definitely miss you,
for sure. I will miss people here. I will miss you all, too, definitely. But it's time to move on. You know when it's time.
Mm-hmm. I do have to say, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here. And I have to honestly, like, people should know that when Sheila came to meet with us at Friedman Place, that's, you know, where I live, it ends up that I wasn't sure about myself at that time. You guys came in at a time where I didn't think I was ready, but you guys had more faith in me than I did at that time. So I want to thank you very much for coming in and seeing something in me that I actually didn't see in myself.
Well, I'm glad we did, and it wasn't hard. Trust me.
Thank you.
It wasn't.
So you were doing a segment with Bill Jurek.
Yes.
And we're just going to continue on with that, if you don't mind.
You said that
you had some questions that are being asked for interviews, right?
Absolutely.
So let's jump right into some of those questions. What do you think?
That sounds good, Brett.
All right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We have found in employment services that the interview process is changing, Brett.
Mm-hmm.
When I mean it's changing, you know, our interview questions used to be very simple and straightforward. Where do you want to be in 5 years?
Yep.
Tell us about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like about the job description? What do you not like about what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses?
Right.
Well, through a number of resources that the department has developed with career building places and other organizations that do employment techniques. Mm-hmm. We always want to learn new things. We have discovered that interview questions are changing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have compiled a list of questions that people need to begin to think about and give some thought to before they go into the interview process.
Okay.
And I want to try to tap into today the questions that would really require you to think,
mm-hmm.
be cautious when you answer, and the ones that could catch you off guard.
Okay.
Like, first, a question. One of the things that we've gotten as a interview question that is now being asked,
mm-hmm.
is employers are now asking interviewees, what are your pet peeves? Now, this could go on forever.
Oh, yeah.
This is something that you could really get into. But you have to remember, the employer is not trying to get to know you. They are trying to get to know what mm-hmm. kind of person you are in relation to the job.
Yeah.
So everything has to be answered in that manner.
Mm-hmm.
You want to try to focus on something that doesn't bother you much, that you can control, mm-hmm. and it doesn't reflect poorly on you as an employee.
Right.
It's something that mainly irritates you more than bothers you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to allow your annoyance to show, naturally, mm-hmm. and you want to make it clear that your pet peeve doesn't prevent you from doing your work or being productive during the workday.
Okay.
So you got to keep the whole thing positive.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like when they ask you, what are your weaknesses?
Right.
You don't want to say, well, I like chocolate, I eat too much macaroni and cheese at Thanksgiving. No, don't go into that.
Right, yep.
You want to say, well, you know, you want to say something positive that can be corrected. Like, mm-hmm. I take on too much work at times, and mm-hmm. I need to slow down.
Yep.
Sometimes I'm constantly thinking about work, and I need to give myself an opportunity to take a break and relax. And, you know, mm-hmm. things that always make it sound like you're trying to better yourself.
Right.
And become a better employee for the employer.
Okay.
Okay, second question. Why are you leaving your current job? Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people, I know this is an old one, but yep. some people don't answer this correctly. The one thing you don't want to say is, I hate my boss. I hate the environment. It's horrible. Those people are just horrible. Never do that.
Right.
You don't know when. You don't know who knows who. You don't know what's mm-hmm. going on. And you don't want to do that. Plus, if you do, the employer is going to sit there and think to himself or herself, oh, my God, they're going to say the same thing about us mm-hmm. if they don't like it here.
Yeah, one of the big things I know when I've went through college was, don't burn any bridges.
Exactly. There yep. you go. That's mm-hmm. the same thing. So you want to be honest and focus your answer on your future aspirations, especially if you're not leaving your current position under ideal circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say, well, I've gone as far as I can go. Mm-hmm. I've grown as far as I can go. And I want to have the opportunity to do some other things.
Mm-hmm.
You have to start thinking of positive things to say,
mm-hmm.
Which is a good reason why you're leaving the job.
Yep.
Not get into the real nitty-gritty stuff.
Right.
That's not what they want to hear.
Okay.
Make certain you don't speak ill about your previous employer mm-hmm. in a negative light. If you're applying for a position in the same industry, your previous employer may be an acquaintance of the interviewer, and you don't want that to happen.
Right.
You don't know that, and you don't want that to happen.
Okay.
Let's see. What else do we have here? Have you ever had trouble working with a specific manager?
Okay.
Now, all of us.
We all have.
Who have worked.
Yep.
We have our horror stories mm-hmm. of people whom we don't like.
Yep.
You know, that we don't want to work with. We never see them again in life. We'd be happy.
Right.
But you have to be careful on this one, too.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these questions are kind of like what I call ticklers. They're really trying to get you to elaborate on something that you don't want to spend too much time on, but you want to answer in a way that will let the person know what kind of employee you could be.
Okay.
So your answer needs to paint you in a positive light, making certain you don't come across as difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Your interview may know your former supervisor, your interviewer,
mm-hmm.
Personally, or maybe talking to him for a reference. So be considerate and respectful when describing a troublesome relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Mention the strengths of the previous supervisor and how this helped you find success in the position.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You want to be able to say something positive maybe not, you can't be so positive. You want the end result to be positive.
Right.
So you could say, well, I had a manager once that expected a lot of me and really did not help me when I got into a situation where I needed assistance in order to finish the project.
Yep.
So what I did was I had to think of a way to get to the person, and I knew it was because they were so busy.
Right.
You know, you don't want to say it's because they were, you know, not a nice person or they didn't like me.
Right.
It might have been because they were so busy or because they had other things to do.
Yep.
That's where your positiveness comes in.
Yeah, you want to try and look on, like, the shoes on the other foot. If I was in the management position, what were they doing? That type of thing of giving them the benefit of the doubt for the most part.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what you want to do.
Okay.
Let's see. Tell me about the work environment you prefer.
Okay.
And a lot of people will say, oh, you know, laid back music. Don't do that. Couch in my office. No, don't, please. What they want to know is a lot of times they want to know if you like working as a team or if you like working by yourself.
Okay.
The answer to that question that I find works team. Is you like both.
Okay.
You like working as a team. Mm-hmm. You do. You like working with other people because that's how you learn. Mm-hmm. That's how you're able to experience other personalities and get other trains of thought.
Yep.
But you also like to take that up. You like to take an opportunity to gather all that you've learned and process it.
Okay.
And that you can do on your own.
Right.
So it's really you got to be both. You know, you got it's the both environments that you like.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
It does. Okay. Yeah, very much so.
Okay. And then let's see, what else do I have? And then, you know, there's always the question, what can you contribute to the company? Why should I hire you?
Mm-hmm.
And you want, you know, and it's never because I'm the best person for the job. Oh, my goodness. Anybody can say that.
Right.
You really and truly want to go back to what made you think about what made you apply for the position in the first place. Mm-hmm. Well, you want to hire me because when I read this job description, it said that you wanted someone that had outreach experience and you wanted someone that could work with community groups. And I've had a lot of experience. You want to go back to reference back to your resume, reference back to what you said in the beginning.
Okay.
Now, this does a couple of things. Number one, it lets them know that you didn't just write your resume for this particular job.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are still doing that.
Yep.
And number two, it also lets them know that what you said when you told, when they said, tell me about yourself, was real. I mean, it wasn't something you're just saying.
Right.
Because you're referencing, you haven't forgotten it. You must have done it because you're saying it again. You're referencing it again.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you go back to what you said earlier when they asked you to tell them about you.
Mm-hmm.
Coupled with the job description and what made you apply for the job.
Okay.
So I think, you know, those are probably five good ones to start off with. And then next time we can talk about some more. We're getting these questions all the time and we're trying to pull out the ones that are new bred so that we can train people. We also are training people in our job club on these questions so that they can really begin to think when they're going into these interviews.
Is the job club currently going on?
Job club will be starting on September 14th.
Okay.
From 1 to 3.
Okay.
Here at the Lighthouse.
Very good.
1 p.m. to 3 p.m. here at the Lighthouse. It'll be facilitated by Maureen Reed.
Okay.
And you know, if you come in the front desk, you just ask where's job club and they'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will be going through some of these in job clubs so people can begin to think about that and think about how they want to handle themselves in an interview.
If anybody wanted to, like, get any tips or hints along the way, can they contact anyone
sure.
in your department?
Sure. They can call me
okay.
At 312-666-1331.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main number. You can ask for Sheila Perkins until October 27th.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also call Maureen Reed, who is the job placement counselor and job club facilitator.
And she is awesome.
And she is awesome. She's a good lady.
Yep.
It can be reached at the same main number, and you just ask for Maureen Reed, and they'll patch you through.
All right. Well, Sheila, thank you very much for
coming
in.
You're welcome, Brett. It was good to see you.
And it was good to see you as well.
And glad to be here. And, you know, we look forward to the upcoming year.
1.4 million people in Illinois really want to work but can't. If they get jobs, they could lose their Medicaid health coverage. And private insurance is difficult to obtain. This is the reality for people with disabilities. The Health Benefits for Workers with Disabilities program can help. HBWD is a state program that provides health insurance for working individuals with disabilities. Call 800-226-0768 or visit hbwdillinois.com. Don't let your disability keep you from working.
Welcome back, everybody. I really enjoyed my conversation with Sheila Perkins. She is one of my favorite people over at the Lighthouse. I know I'm going to miss her. We had lots of good conversations, and she was always a good person to, you know, pat me on the shoulder when I was doing a good job, and she liked to see everybody that she's helped succeed.
And I think another thing with Sheila, you know, her sense of humor was just great.
Oh, yes, definitely.
You know, I think that's what she'll be remembered for, too, here around the building, around the Lighthouse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, also her tough love.
Yep.
You know, mm-hmm. she was always great at giving you constructive criticism, you know, telling you how you would could improve, mm-hmm. what you should be doing. You know, she has, I should say, that perfect balance. And it's very fitting for, you know, her position in employment services.
This segment was really a good one because I didn't know that the questions have changed that much while you're going through the interview process. So it was good for her to stop by to be able to give us some indication of what these questions are and kind of just tips of, you know, how to answer them and what these employers are looking for when they're asking these questions. That those are good things to remember.
Very much so. It's always good to have that information and resource available.
But speaking of remembering, you had a very interesting, basically, conversation dealing with the brain and Alzheimer's.
That's it. And, you know, also something that, you know, it's important not just to remember, but to have resources, you know, speaking of, learn how to deal with and work with a situation like this. Because as we know, Alzheimer's disease or dementia in general, you know, can be devastating to the family, to the friends, relatives of people that are affected by this condition. And I actually spoke with Brittany Mayberry, who is part of the Alzheimer's Association, the Illinois chapter. And, you know, Brett, she gave us great information on, like, different resources that are available to caregivers, classes that they offer, which is so important to learn how to care for your loved one. To tell us a little more about the Alzheimer's Association and about the work they do, here is Brittany Mayberry. Brittany, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Sandy.
And you're the manager of education and outreach.
Yes.
That's correct. So tell us a little bit. First of all, tell us a little bit of the background of the Alzheimer's Association.
Yeah. So the Alzheimer's Association started in 1980. So we've been around for a little while now. And it was really formed by a group of family caregivers and individuals who were interested in research and providing care and support for people who were starting to develop the disease.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really how we were founded, and our mission today is pretty similar: to eliminate Alzheimer's disease through the advancement of research, to provide and enhance care and support for all affected, and to reduce the risk of dementia through the promotion of brain health.
So what are some of the you know, I know that you are involved in research. Well, first of all, what kind of research do you...
There is so much research going on, and we are really one of the biggest funders, the biggest mm-hmm. nonprofit funder of research in the U.S. And
sure.
There's research going on from trying to figure out better ways of diagnosing the disease to trying to ultimately find that cure, which is really... Our ultimate vision mm-hmm. is having that world without Alzheimer's disease.
Sure. Sure. No, it's a, you know, a very devastating disease that plays a huge toll, not just on the patient, but also on the caregivers and their
yeah.
loved ones. So what other services do you offer besides research?
We are doing a lot of different things, and a lot of what we focus on is care and support for people who have the disease, as well as for family members who are trying to maintain those relationships with their loved ones. So it kind of runs the gamut from a 24/7 helpline
mm-hmm.
that people can access at any time. it's actually nationwide, so they can call from wherever they are and get connected to resources in their community. So that number is 1-800-272-3900. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of services for people in the early stages of the disease or people who have the disease in a younger onset, which means they are younger than that typical diagnosis age of 65 and older.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, there are education programs, support groups, a lot of different things going on there.
Mm.
We do a lot of education as well, which is really what I'm kind of part of and doing most of the time. From kind of the community standpoint, the public, people wanting to know more about the disease, the 10 warning signs, things like that, all the way to people, again, who are caregivers, who are trying to figure out how to communicate with their loved one, how to manage some of the behaviors they might be exhibiting, and all of that as well.
Yeah, tell us a little more about the education services. You know, how are they held? I understand that you even hold web seminars. Can you please tell us?
Yeah, absolutely. We're really trying to reach as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. So we realize that in person is great. If people can come out to something in their community, we want to be there offering that service at their libraries, their senior centers, other organizations in their area. But we also recognize that some people can't make it out to those programs. And Illinois is a big state, so we're scheduling as many things as we can in person. But sometimes there might be a gap in when we're doing a program in a certain area. So people can also join us by webinar or through programs by phone. And our manager of that multimedia education, Mike Bias, he does a great job of really trying to make it conversational and engaging so that people can kind of join in and learn from people, researchers, from people who are working with Alzheimer's and dementia day to day. It's kind of, again, there's a wide variety of different topics he's presenting for people.
Now, are these seminars held year-round, or how often are they?
Yeah,
held?
We are out there every week doing something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, part of it is just trying to make sure that we're working in different communities and trying to get out to a lot of different areas and doing that wide range of topics so that in each area we're really hitting a lot of different pieces of what people might be experiencing and need to be connecting with us.
Sure. And, you know, we were talking before we got on the air. You mentioned the 10 signs of dementia, and some people, you know, people often say, you know, oh, I forgot. Maybe I, you know, I have the early stages of Alzheimer's, or, you know, I've heard that a lot from some people that, you know, that they'll be worried, like if they forget something occasionally. You know, dementia, you know, it's more than that. It's more symptoms than simply forgetting, you know, everyday things.
Yes.
Can you tell us, share the 10 signs?
Yes. So we do an entire hour-long program that really goes through the 10 signs and why early detection is important.
Mm-hmm.
But really what we're looking at, and there are so many people who are getting concerned about this. They think especially they hear memory loss, forgetfulness, mm-hmm. and they think, oh gosh, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
But we're really talking about changes. Mm-hmm. So if we're starting to notice changes in our ability to solve problems, in our ability to learn, especially remembering recently learned information.
Sure.
That's when we start to talk about there might be something more going on. And we're talking about changes that are, you know, not just, oh, I forgot my keys in my apartment, which I do pretty much every day.
Yeah, we all do, you know.
Or, gosh, I've met this person a couple times now, why can't I remember their name? These are things that a lot of us struggle with. But mm-hmm. if it's starting to really impact daily living,
sure.
and you're starting to notice that it's worsening, it's progressing, that's when we start talking about there might be something more going on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a section of our website people can check out to see all 10 of the warning signs and look at what is the difference between typical aging?
Mm-hmm.
Because we do have some changes with those things as we get older naturally. But then there's a difference between what's typical aging and what is maybe Alzheimer's or dementia.
Sure. And now earlier you mentioned early onset dementia. You know, that's something that I learned about a few months ago, and it was shocking, to be honest. How early are we talking about patients getting this?
You know, typically we're seeing early onset. People start showing symptoms in their 40s or 50s. Mm-hmm. But there have been some cases where people are maybe even in their 30s and starting to show symptoms. Mm. That is much rarer. Sure. So the majority of people who have Alzheimer's, they're 65 or older when they start showing symptoms. Mm-hmm. But for some people, that is a very real concern because it is out there and there are people who fall into that younger age range.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I don't know if you might be able to expand on this, but, you know, are there genetic factors involved or is there any research that's being done on early onset?
Yes. So there are several genetic factors that are involved. Again, I don't have all of the information right in front of me because I'm not a doctor or a scientist. But there are a couple genes that scientists have discovered increase the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple differences there as well.
Sure.
I know there's more information about that on our website as well as through our helpline. They would have access to that information as well.
Yeah, and I know that your website has a wealth of information. Do you guys offer any type of community support online, you know, for caregivers or?
Yeah, absolutely. We have an entire caregiver resource center on mm-hmm. our website where people can access tips and tools for, you know, finding day-to-day activities or getting connected to resources. There's a community resource finder as well where people can look up in their area, mm-hmm. you know, what kinds of providers are there. There's a list of questions to ask if you're looking for a living situation for your loved one, if they need to go stay somewhere else away from home, what mm-hmm. should I be looking for? What should I be asking those places?
Sure, sure. Now, how can people find out more?
Well, as I mentioned, people can always call our 24/7 helpline, 1-800-272-3900, if they want to learn more, find out more, see what's going on in their community.
Sure.
You can always go to our website. The Illinois website is alz.org/Illinois.
And again, the helpline number is 1-800-272-3900. And the website is www.alz.org/Illinois. Is that right?
Yep.
Great. Well, that was Brittany Mabry from the Alzheimer's Association, Illinois chapter. Well, Brittany, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you again, Sandy.
This is Coach Mike Ditka. I'm asking you to support my friends at the Chicago Lighthouse, who are providing critical educational services to children who are blind, visually impaired, or multi-disabled. Through its innovative preschool, Birth to Three, and other cutting-edge programs, the Lighthouse is making a big difference in the lives of these children.
This is Dr. Janet Slick, President and CEO of the Chicago Lighthouse. These are exciting times here at the Chicago Lighthouse. The Chicago Lighthouse provides a community of comprehensive care for people who are blind, visually impaired, disabled, and veterans. To find out how you can help, call 312-997-3675 or visit us at chicagolighthouse.org.
We are back here on the Beacon.
And said that a few times now.
Right. And don't forget that you can hear the rebroadcast of this show on Chris Radio. And also you can find it online at the Chicago Lighthouse website /radio. That way you can pick it up at your leisure.
Which I did this week.
Yes.
And it's very, very easy. You just go to the website and click listen to this particular show. And there it is. Pops right up.
You want to do that.
Yes,
and
you
now,
do.
Without further ado, She has a big smile like Rachel Ray, and unlike Martha Stewart, she doesn't have a prison sentence.
Not yet, anyway. Give me time.
And she's decidedly taller than the visually impaired chef and restaurateur Laura Martinez.
How tall is Laura Martinez?
I'm not sure, but I know that
you're... I'm taller.
You're taller. Especially when, well, even if you don't wear heels, but...
Wow. Well, that was quite an introduction, my friend.
Well, and here she is, ladies and gentlemen, Lainey Kleeman with Let Us Turn Up the Beat.
Thank you, sir. My goodness, I am humbled and honored. Good morning, everybody. Every year that I have done Let Us Turn Up the Beat, we have given a public service announcement for the pumpkin spice lattes that all of the restaurants you can find anywhere are selling this time of year. I used to be a huge PSL fan, and then I realized what was in them, and it's a little bit horrifying.
Oh.
Yes, it is. So I'm just going to give you a quick rundown of what one of the more popular coffee chains, what is in there, well, not what's in there, but the nutritional facts for the pumpkin spice lattes. In a 16-ounce, which is a medium, with 2% milk, you've got 380 calories.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically lunch right there. 14 grams of fat, 52 grams of carbohydrates, and 50 grams of sugar in a 16-ounce drink. Yes.
That's not good.
That is not good, baby. That is not good. And the ingredients list, I won't get into that, but it's full of just processed chemical, just the syrup. It doesn't use real pumpkin. It's all processed syrups. So I, every year, like to put out there how to make your own, because they are so yummy and they are so cozy. And, you know, pumpkin spice, everything pumpkin spice has gotten a little overdone the last few years. You can find pumpkin spice flavored cardboard if you want it bad enough. But the pumpkin spice latte is sort of where it all originated from. So to make your own, you're going to want half a cup of unsweetened vanilla almond milk, 3 tablespoons of pumpkin puree, a teaspoon of pumpkin pie spice, half a teaspoon of vanilla, a few drops of your favorite sweetener, or a teaspoon or two of, you know, organic sugars, 8 ounces of brewed coffee, and then just a sprinkle of cinnamon. So in your blender, in order to make it really, really foamy like you get in lattes, go ahead and put your milk, your pumpkin pie puree, and all of your spices. You blend that up real nice, get it real nice and frothy, put it in your coffee cup, and then add it to your coffee, and voila, you have your very own homemade pumpkin spice latte. I have made it before. It is delicious.
Mm-hmm.
It is healthy in one cup of that I just described. You've got 25 calories from the organic pumpkin puree, and then you've got the almond milk is 15 calories. So it's 15 calories and half a cup of almond milk. So you're looking at basically a 40-calorie drink right there, as opposed to the nearly 400-calorie drink that you would get at most of the common coffee chains these days.
Ooh.
So, my friends, go ahead, give it a try. The sugar count, you get two grams of sugar in the pumpkin puree. A teaspoon of sugar is 15 calories. So you're looking at something much, much less significant in terms of the bad nutrition if you just make it yourself. And it's so much better, and you know what's going into it, and you know, there's nothing quite as satisfying as making your very own homemade pumpkin spice latte. Mm-hmm. So that's it, my friend. That is my annual PSL PSA, if you will. And we'll be back next week with some other yummy fall treats. We're getting into Thanksgiving time already, so I'll be having some recipes up and coming for the coming holidays.
That's not a bad idea.
Thank you,
and
darling.
Maybe we could get Laura Martinez. You two could talk and kibitz about Thanksgiving.
That would be great.
Things like that.
Oh, that would be great. I should interview her on the air.
And find out what she's doing. She's got a restaurant now. But
perfect.
We're going to go to Luke's Laboratory. No longer Corner.
No longer Tom's Corner. We've been promoted.
Corner. We had a building built.
That's true. I never really thought about it. Listen, now I'm just envisioning you guys like sitting in a small little corner, like with your little dunce caps on because you were bad.
No. There's been some improvements.
That's great. We've rehabbed the place a little bit.
Got on our white coats and our goggles.
With your steaming beakers in front of you.
Exactly.
Nice.
And
love
we
it.
Have all of that going on. It's time for Luke and his assistive technology talk. You know, this time of year, a lot of new television programs are debuting. Some you'll probably like, others you'll probably only get a chance to see once, and then they're gone. But Luke is here today, and he's got information on different methods for watching television. How are you doing, Luke?
I'm doing good. It seems like fall is finally upon us, so that's a little bit sad. But I'm looking forward to seeing the leaves change color and enjoying a bit of haunted houses and things like that.
Right. And don't forget the candy.
Oh, there you go. That's the best part.
Well, so methods for watching television. I'm a big television fan myself. Mm-hmm. So how can we do that?
Well, there's actually a number of different ways, believe it or not. One of the big goals of people that we see is watching TV, because everybody loves to watch TV. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a few different things that people can do to improve their experience. So one of the things is pretty self-explanatory. It's something that a lot of people will do naturally, and that's sit closer to your television, right? So the closer that you sit, the relatively larger the screen will become. There is actually a little trick to this, though, that people might not think about. If you have macular degeneration, obviously the central vision is not so good, but the peripheral vision is still pretty good. And so what you can do is sit up close to your TV, but actually sit to the side of it rather than straight in front of it. So if your left eye is the better seeing eye, you would sit to the right side of the television. And if your right eye is the better seeing eye, you would sit to the left side of the television. And the idea is not to look straight at the television, because that central vision is, you know, missing. But instead, by sitting to the side, you can use your peripheral vision to see the screen. And it takes a bit of practice, but you'll find that you can actually see the screen better by doing that. So that's one technique which we like to recommend to people.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is some of the 4K televisions. I don't know if you've heard about this, the 4K, but it's the next step up after we had our HD. So everybody's got their HD TVs now. And now they've gone to 4K, which is much improved over HD in terms of the resolution. And I've heard from a number of people with vision loss that those 4K TVs are actually helping them to see their televisions better. And so that is another option. You could try getting a higher resolution TV and seeing whether that makes things a little bit crisper. That's another one for you. So now moving on to some technology solutions. We've talked on the show before about different electronic glasses, so the Iris Vision and the eSight, and other ones like the Jordy. All of those have actually got methods for watching television. And so the eSight, you can plug your cable box directly into the eSight glasses and the video image will show on the screens, and you're then able to magnify that image. And when you magnify, you always reduce the field of view, so you won't see the entire television screen anymore. However, eSight does have head panning feature, where when you're zoomed in, you can just move your head around from left to right, up and down, and it will pan around the TV image. So that's a really cool way of watching television. Actually, the sound also comes out of the glasses, so that's another cool thing about it. It's like right there on your face. The Jordy has got something similar. It's got an HDMI input. You can plug your cable box right in there. And again, you can magnify in the middle, but it doesn't have head panning. So it will just magnify in the center of the image. But with television, generally the action's happening in the center of the screen anyway, so that still works pretty well. Iris Vision have got a nice thing. It hasn't released yet, but they are going to have TV streaming, so you will be able to stream Netflix directly into the Iris Vision. And it is basically akin to sitting in the cinema. It's like a really huge screen in front of your face, and you're streaming all of your favorite television programs from Netflix directly to the glasses. Like I say, it hasn't released, that feature hasn't released yet, but I've seen it in action, and it is very cool. So that's definitely something to keep your eyes on. One more method for you. This one's slightly different, but it's audio description. And for those people who don't know what audio description is, it's basically you would watch a film and there would be a narrator who narrates the action as it happens, so that you can listen to what's happening as opposed to having to see it. That works really well. One of the interesting things that's been happening recently is a lot of the streaming services have started to add audio description to their programs. Netflix is one of the first ones, and all of the Netflix original shows will have audio description built in. And so you can listen to the film as it progresses, which is great. And Amazon, subscribers to Amazon Prime who get the Prime videos, Amazon has a number of films with audio description content as well. So those are just some tips for watching TV. It's worth checking them out and seeing whether any of those improve your viewing experience.
Wow, those are great ways of improving your television watching experience.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Geordie, the eSight, and the Iris Vision are available in the Tools for Living store.
Indeed they are, and we will be happy to sit down and show you those, and we can show you the television input side of those as well if you're interested in that. You can make an appointment to see any of those by calling me at 312-997-3649.
All right, now, a new feature within a feature.
Mm-hmm.
Customer of the week.
And this week it's actually going to be Students of the Week. So we have a slightly different tack this time, just because I met some students from IIT, Illinois Institute of Technology, and they were coming in to do a project on improving the usability of your traditional white cane. Now, I will say that a number of people have tried to do this before, not so successfully, because the design is actually pretty much perfect as it is.
Right.
So there have been various things in terms of people trying to build like flashing lights or like vibrations or like things like that into the cane, but it's never really that practical. However, these students actually had a great idea, and I had some people who work here come down and take a look, and everyone was very impressed. It's going to sound very simple. However, which it is, however, it's also very effective. And that was this idea. So with your regular white cane, there's an elastic line that runs through the cane, and it comes out the top in a loop, and you can fold up, this is with your folding cane, of course, you can fold it up into pieces and wrap the elastic loop around the cane so it doesn't pop apart. However, the problem with that is the elastic isn't very tight, so the cane isn't particularly kind of small when you fold it up. It's still kind of bulky because the pieces aren't very tight together. So what these students had done, which was extremely simple but very clever, is just affixed some Velcro to the handle of the cane, and now when you fold up your cane, you can wrap the Velcro strip around as tight as you need it, and it will keep the cane very compressed, and that will make it more portable and easier to put in your bag and things like that. So very simple idea, but effective, and everybody really seemed to like it.
I'm surprised. Does the cane need improving? I mean, why do they focus in on the cane?
Well, actually, so they'd been given that project as part of one of their classes. So that's why they were focusing on the cane. But it seems that a lot, we oftentimes get people in, like I say, who are trying to do this. And I'm not really sure why. My feeling would be that it's considered to be old technology, and so everyone thinks, hey, this is old, there must be something better we can do now.
Right.
But the fact is, there really isn't. it's really ideal as it is. But saying that, I do think this Velcro thing could really, really be a good thing, because you can do it for cheap, and it actually has a functional purpose, and it's something that people who are blind would actually benefit from, and I think they would respond well to it.
Yeah, I think people were probably trying to think too big, you know, trying to come up with something really to redesign it, not thinking simple enough.
That's exactly what it is. But these guys have taken the simpler route, and it's all the better for it.
Well, kudos to them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, road shows.
Yes, we got two road shows coming up, the first of which is next week, and that's at Palos Hills Community Center. The address is 8455 West 103rd Street, Palos Hills. And then we have one the week after, and that's October 11th, and that's in Northwest Indiana at our Tradewinds location. And the address is 3198 East 83rd Place, and that's Merrillville, Indiana, 46410. So we'd be more than glad to see people there, show them the different technology that we've talked about on this show, as well as a number of other items. And please come along and bring your family.
All right. So you have it there. Methods for Watching Television are Students of the Week this week. Mm-hmm. And of course, the road shows. But next week, we'll be here with more information from the corner to Luke's laboratory. I'm Brian Hawkins, along with Luke Scriven. This is the Lighthouse Beacon.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Being a veteran here, I think, has helped me. I could not see, because this is why I initially was brought here by a counselor from the VA, because like, they collaborate with each other and help us to get our vision better. When I first walked in here, I didn't know the life of a blind person. I actually didn't know. And when I came here, I walked through the door and I could see how people were so, you know, they act like they could see. And it was so inspirational to me. I cried like a kid when I first got it, because I was overwhelmed to see how people can deal with blindness, you know.
And the Lighthouse really, really has helped me with a lot of things because I've learned to be more knowledgeable about computers. And they have an exercise class that they teach us how to exercise. So every fourth Friday of the month, we have a luncheon where all the seniors meet. We sit there and talk about different events and different things. And my greatest passion right now is being on the radio, reading to the blind. That's my greatest passion. I really love that. Number one is to be able to give back to people that can't see, because I was overwhelmed. And I promise God within myself that I will do this until I cannot see again. This is my greatest passion in my life.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
It sure does. It just flies by. And we want to thank, of course, our executive producer, Sandy Brett. What are we saying?
Sandy Brett.
Well, that's Sandy Brett.
Every week. Well, not every week, but I wrote the breakdown of the show, and I have Sandy Brett.
And that's exactly what I was looking at, too. We should just put their names together, and it would be like Brandy or Sweat.
You know, I thought about that.
We'll just refer to them as one. Moving forward, they'll just be Brandy. All right, Sandy Murillo and Brett Shishkov with all of their wonderful contributions, speaking today to Brittany Mayberry and, of course, to my co-host and wonderful producer, Brian Hawkins.
Hey, that's me.
That is you. I'm so happy you're sitting next to me. Makes me happy. And the director of the Lighthouse, Miss Janet Schlick, mm-hmm. who has fought for us to be on the air here and here and here. And, of course, our very dear Bill Jurek, who is no longer with us in person, but is always with us in spirit. Have a wonderful week, everyone.